So the four different areas of relationship balance that you have to pay attention to, that you need to focus on, that you can review later on if you want to, right, reading the Tao of Badass or going through the founding member calls, is compliance, which is essentially your priorities versus her priorities. So to get more information on that, like I said, listen to the earlier founding member calls. We have power, which is the decision-making or leadership within the relationship. We have value, which is how much you're needed outside the relationship. This is the only external factor in relationship balance. And then finally, neediness, which is how much you've invested into the interaction or relationship versus how much the person you're with is invested into the relationship. So if you balance these four things for your relationship, you will always have a healthy relationship. But if you don't and you let one slip, or what happens most of the time, you may let all of them slip and they sort of get out of hand, then you will absolutely see the repercussions for that, as in things will start to fall apart and you won't know why, and you'll lose that sort of girl you've been waiting forever to get. Whenever I sort of first got into this, almost 10 years ago now, actually, I first started studying, but I've been a professional coach for about 6 of those 10 years. Almost 10 years ago, I was, it's a pretty popular story now that I've told about 100,000 people, is that I started out working at a gas station, I was studying Zen, I met this girl, and I didn't know what I was doing, so I couldn't keep her attracted. And that was a major problem of mine, and I fell victim to these four areas. I didn't know how to balance them out at the time, and so I ended up having to go away for like 8 years and then come back and finally got her back again, and now she's my girlfriend. But that was 8 years of me studying full-time and really spending my entire life focused on this stuff, and I was able to understand some of this stuff, but it took me a very long time to figure it out. So if you can just learn this really, really well, by the time you get into a relationship with the girl of your dreams that you really want, you'll know how to keep her attracted for a long period of time. So focus on those for sure. We went over also how to handle sort of the lighthearted attraction phase, the deep, friendly, emotional rapport phase, and the sexual, manly, powerful seduction phase when you've already slept with a girl. So once you've slept with her once, then what do you do? Well, one of the major ways to sort of look at this that's really helpful is to switch between stages almost at random. So you're going to be going from rapport to attraction to seduction to attraction to rapport, you know, back and forth, back to seduction, you know, and it sort of happens in different waves throughout your relationship. And in one day, you can go through these three different stages, attraction, rapport, and seduction, you know, 15 times. You can go through them in different waves like that. You just have to be able to recognize which stage you're in and then be able to calibrate so that you're not, you know, in attraction. You're like sort of bantering a lot when she's trying to be serious and she's trying to be in rapport. Or going in deep rapport and being kind of emotional when she's trying to be sexual. So make sure that you, again, brush up on that if you don't know much about it. Another thing we talked about is gender role reversal. Gender role reversal is the number one cause of divorce and premature breakups that don't, you know, that aren't like, that haven't been coming for a long time at least. You know, if you've been dating a girl, usually at around the six to nine month mark, gender role reversal starts to try to kick in. And what it is when you get into a relationship for any extended period of time and you get into a groove, meaning you get into sort of a routine that happens, whoever's playing the female gender role will eventually begin to worry that this routine is unhealthy, meaning that she can't really tell anymore if you're leading, you're just kind of doing what you've always done, and she can't tell whether or not you've got the reins in this relationship. So what will tend to end up happening is that she'll tend to test you a bunch. And because most guys don't see it as a test, you know, they're like, well, now she's starting to get bossy all of a sudden. She's starting to tell me what to do. You know, I don't really like this very much. And, you know, she's sort of trying to be the man, and I don't like that. So what do most guys do? Most guys end up being complacent, and they just give up, right? So they're like, fine, you do that, and I'm going to sit over here and just watch the football game, you know? And they get into what's called yes, dear mentality. So they get in this yes, dear loop. They start saying, yes, dear, yes, dear, yes, dear. You know, that's pretty much it. And that's the beginning of the end of their relationship. And the reason why is because women are actually testing to see whether or not you are in the right mindset and whether or not you are actually still interested in leading the relationship and leading the interaction. And what they do in sort of the backward way that they test to see if this is happening is they try to lead and they try to resist your leading. So there's a point in the relationship where you have to stand up and go, no, no, I'm taking control of this, and you have to just be okay with that. And you'll have to continually remind her of that over time. Well, most guys fail this, and so they end up reversing gender roles. Well, all of a sudden, the guy's playing the female gender role, the female's playing the male gender role, and they typically hate each other for that, and they start to resent each other, and that's the beginning of the hatred that ends the relationship. So a very, very powerful thing. Again, if you need more information on that, review. And check out more information yourself. We also went over the consummate love triangle. This is a take on Robert Sternberg's concept from the, he's a psychologist from the 80s, called the triangular theory of love. And it's basically how to tell whether or not you're in love with someone. And it's really difficult to tell whether or not, unless you have this, unless you have this system, whether or not it's like a hopeless romantic sort of pie in the sky relationship that's not going to work out versus someone that you could actually love forever and be with for the rest of your life. And it's really, really difficult, if not nearly impossible, to tell the difference between the two of those if you don't run yourself through this system called the consummate love triangle. The most important thing about this process is to recognize when it is that you see that it's not actually a good idea to continue, that you, instead of trying to force it, that you either enter into a polyamorous relationship, which basically means that you are now dating her plus you're dating other women at the same time, and they all know about it and they're all okay with it. And in fact, they love you more for it. They're excited about it. And I talked a little bit about how to do that in the last call. But if you don't enter, you know, if two of those don't exist, like two of the three areas of consummate love triangle don't exist, then you don't do anything with her. If two but not three exist, then you want to be in a polyamorous relationship. And if all three of these different areas exist, then you can date her exclusively, and you have sort of a green light to move forward with that relationship and, you know, go as deep as you really want to, because as long as you balance it all out, you'll be in a healthy relationship. So you went over that. I also went over the rules of polyamory. So if you were new to that concept and you're interested in it, about dating multiple women, I did it for years, and it was very, very nice. I'd only do that with women that I was sure I didn't want to be with for the rest of my life. I just, you know, they were very attractive, but they weren't perfect for me. And at some point, it goes beyond looks. You know, when you feel like you can attract any woman you want, you eventually will, you know, maybe you feel this way now, that it's not just about looks. It, you know, looks are important, but it's not just looks. There's a lot of other things, too. So just because a girl's hot doesn't mean you want to be with her for the rest of your life. Trust me. So I went down that road. I ended up dating a girl that was an absolute witch and evil, like the fruits of the devil. And and she was pretty bad, and I ended up taking a lot of psychological abuse because of that relationship. So I definitely don't want you to do that. And that was because I thought that, you know, this girl's hot, so if she's hot, that means I did a good job, right? But that's not really the case. You know, you want her to be very attractive, and definitely want her to be sexually stimulating to you, but you also need a few other things that are crucial for a long-term relationship. So six stages of poly dating. Poly dating is basically being polyamorous and dating lots of women at the same time. The six steps are as follows. So these aren't going to make very much sense because I'm going to breeze through them pretty quickly. But I'll just kind of say what they are, and if you want more information, go back, like I said. The first stage is called the setup. That's where you're sort of setting up the interaction so that she's comfortable with you being polyamorous. The second is called the objections. This is when you're handling all of her questions and objections that she has about polyamory. Then the third stage is called the reinforcement. This is whenever you reinforce the idea that you are actually polyamorous and you're not going to date just her by yourself. This is an important stage. The fourth stage is called the sex. That's pretty easy to understand. I don't think I need to explain that one too much. If anybody needs help with that, then press star 2 on your phone, and I'll have Brad talk to you about the birds and the bees. But there are some rules for polyamory, though, that are very, very important with around sex that are crucial, that if you don't get them right, you can actually ruin the polyamorous relationship. So keep that in mind. The fifth stage is called the search. This is where you are finding other women to add to sort of your harem of group of women that are totally into you and only you, usually. And then finally, you hit the sixth stage, which is sort of like the echelon of value for a man and attractiveness as a man, and that is called the waterfall. And the waterfall is where you have a snowball effect of women that are sort of being sucked into your life and that gravitate toward you and that sort of enter your world, so that you never have to go approach women ever again. They just kind of come up to you and start talking to you, and they get a sense about you, or they hear about you through a friend of theirs who's actually dating you, and they want to come meet you and talk to you. So I know it sounds kind of crazy, but it works and it happens. So when it first started happening to me, I was like, this is absolutely not real. I must be asleep. Because it was just everything I had hoped was possible with women was happening to me. So, and I wasn't having to do hardly any work. So the waterfall is a very, very powerful concept. Polydating is the waterfall is sort of the linchpin mechanism that makes polydating possible. So if you want to know more about that, definitely listen to past Founding Members Club calls. I also have a product coming out pretty soon. It's like a short, straight to the point, no BS, like just telling you exactly how it is and how to do it, product called Polydating, which will be coming out in the next couple months. So keep your eyes out for that. And grab a copy as soon as you can when it comes out. It should be pretty awesome. So, all right, so that's what we covered last time. We talked a little bit about some other stuff, but nothing really, really in detail. So before I get into the new concepts for today, what I'd like to do is go ahead and take some questions. Brad, are you cool with us taking questions right now? Is there any objections? I don't know why you'd have an objection, but maybe you're like, no, I don't feel like questions right now. So, okay, so first question's from Dan. In Brazil. Dan, you wrote a few questions. Thanks for doing that, man. That's good. I love getting lots of questions, so feel free to ask some more. First question from Dan. He says that I've been going out a lot lately, but I've been finding that my progress is quite slow, which by the way, is normal, so don't worry about that. The only time I have fast results in field is when I had a mentor. However, I have not been able to find a mentor yet. How can I get faster results or faster progress when I do not have a mentor to model and hold me accountable? Well, that's a really great question. And hands down, the best way for anyone who's here, who's on this call now, or who's listening to this period, even if it's a recording, if you do not have someone that you're going out with, you are missing out on about 90% of the progress that you will make with women. Now, I know that sounds a little extreme, but it's true. I've seen most of my actual applicable skill sets that I've gotten and the progress that I made with women, I made whenever I found someone else who was doing this that I started going out with. Even if they are worse than you, it doesn't matter. They still have stuff they can teach you. So the people that I would go out with would be good at specific things, and I would model just those good things in those people. So the question here Dan, you're saying is, how do you get faster progress without having someone to mentor you? Well, the best way to do this, man, and I know this is going to be a little bit strange at first, but a mentor is someone who within whom you recognize that they have a skill set that you want. That's what a mentor is. And a mentor agrees to teach you that skill set, right? So what separates a mentor from a normal person that you see? Let's say you walk into a bar, you see a group of 10 guys, and you have another friend that comes in who's your mentor. What's the difference between the guy who's your mentor and those 10 guys standing over there in the bar, right? The major difference is, A, that you know them. So you know the mentor. You've already met them. That's one thing. But the second thing is that you've recognized that this mentor has something to teach you. This is the big difference, right? So as you're here on this call, you've recognized that I have something to teach you. That's why you're here. So it's easy to see when someone has a lot of credentials, like myself, or has authored a lot of products, or gets a lot of praise. It's easy to see that they are good with women. But what is not so easy to see is when you walk into a bar and you see the guy who's just naturally good with women, it's not so easy to see that he has something to teach you. It's more as if he is a competitor of yours, right? But that shouldn't really be the case. Most of the stuff that I learned that was really badass, that was awesome, that helped me out the most with women, and really kind of blew my mind the most with women, I didn't learn from books or sort of dating guru guys. What I did was I would go to the bar or wherever, club, or if I was walking down the street and I saw somebody talking to a bunch of girls, I would talk to this guy. I would talk to the guys at the bar that were good with women that I saw. And I would just be like, hey man, can I ask you a question? And I would just ask specific, like dumbed down kind of questions, because a lot of these guys have no idea how to do what they're doing. They're just kind of doing it, And I would go, how are you doing what you're doing? Like, what if you had to break it down for me, what would you say that you do that attracts women? Are you like walking up and, just in your own terms? And they'll give you sometimes the craziest responses. Like, all I do is buy a drink, turn to my left and hand it to the first person I see, then turn to my right and talk to the first girl I see. It's like, okay, well, all right, let me try it out. And whatever they do, just be open to trying it out and seeing it. seeing how well it works. If you do this, I guarantee you, you'll be one of the best people in your city, which is in Brazil, which is just so you know, so everyone knows. You'll be one of the best people in your city at attracting women because you'll begin to take all the positive qualities of all the guys around you. This is something that I've seen most guys in this sort of field of study shy away from because they see the guys who are really good with women as being competition. But if they are competition and you think that you can't beat them, then you have to learn from them. Otherwise, they will always be better than you. So you have to get what's in their brain into your brain, you know? And you want to do this when obviously you don't want to like approach him while he's in the middle of talking to a chick because then he might, you know, be upset with you and be annoyed. So instead of doing that, you want to approach him whenever, you know, you see him talking to a bunch of girls and he's like seems like he's flawlessly doing some attraction stuff. Then walk up to him, then talk to him, get his attention, and just like, you know, as a friend, like a guy-to-guy kind of thing, just ask him what he thinks and ask him to tell you what he does. And I've had guys tell me, like, literally step-by-step everything they did during this process. I mean, I learned how to use negative body language because I asked the guy this. I was like, what are you doing specifically? And he said, oh, I'm just turning my back. And so I said, okay, let me try it out. You know, it didn't make any sense to me at first. And then I turned my back to a girl that was attracted to me or seemed to be a little bit interested in me and instantly ramped the attraction up like crazy. And she was extremely, extremely attracted to me after that. So that's sort of what led to me discovering one of the biggest secrets of attraction, which is the use of what's called negative body language, which will, when used properly, will ramp up attraction to amazing proportions for you and sort of do most of the work for you without having to say anything. So that's one of the best ways to do that, Dan. Is to go ahead and ask the guys who you see that are good. Now, until then, also, since you're a member of the Dial Badass, you can actually go into the members area. You can, if you update your location, so if you update and say that you're in, you know, your city in Brazil, then you can find other guys who are nearby on the map section of the Dial Badass members area. So you can go in there, join the movement, sort of go in, look in your area of Brazil, and you should be able to contact any of those guys to see if they want to go out. And if, like I said, if you're better than most of them, that's okay. Try to figure out what they know really well and what they do well and get that thing into your brain. Just take the best parts of everybody and start putting them into your tool belt, all the things that they do into your tool belt so that you can have these abilities. This is a huge secret that a lot of guys don't do or know, and they end up only being as good as the people that they recognize as being good, and they ignore all the really powerful sort of subconscious attraction techniques that guys are naturally using out there. So that's one. Brad.
Yes.
I want to know if you can go ahead and read some of these questions to me so that they can sort of hear two different voices here. Can you read Jonathan's question for me?
I don't see Jonathan's. Oh, no. I only see questions from Dan.
Okay, refresh that page then. We need some on-hold music here.
Oh, okay.
You see it?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, great.
Jonathan, all right. So Jonathan says, can you talk about body language and touch in relationship balance? Anytime you touch, hold, kiss her, does that count as seduction? Who should be initiating touch, and what's the difference between being affectionate and clingy?
Okay, great. Well, that's eight questions. That's no big deal. No, I'm just kidding. It's only a couple. But body language and touch and relationship balance. So when you are you've gone past the stage of attraction one time, and you're in the rapport phase, whatever, your body language shifts drastically. Like when you get in rapport, you don't use negative body language anymore. Right, that just doesn't happen. When you get into seduction, you can pull away, but you're going to give positive body language while you do it. So you can actually lean away from a girl when she's trying to kiss you for a second and smile and sort of create anticipation, but you're not turning your back to her anymore. So body language shifts drastically as you go through. Once you've already slept with the girl, what a lot of guys do is they bounce back to the attraction phase with their body language, and that's a bad idea. You can, as long as you're being extremely playful, you can do a couple little things. But over time, like, you know, a couple little negative body language turns if you want to. But over time, you're going to give less and less negative body language. Now, the difference between being affectionate and being clingy is that clingy guys need the affection. As in, they need it and they end up being like children. Like, it comes across as being needy. Now, let me explain sort of how you can... You can see the difference between being clingy and needy in a relationship, and being, like you're saying, affectionate and like a powerful form of affection. And most of that sort of lies in your intention. I know this sounds kind of weird, but women can pick up on this, and you actually start to do things a little bit differently whenever your intention is different. So think about it this way. When you're being affectionate to a girl, with a girl that you're dating, especially during the relationship balance phase, after you've already been sexual with her, and once at least, and you're sort of, you know, being affectionate and sometimes sexual, but let's say affectionate for now, like kissing, holding, hugging, that kind of thing, spooning, cuddling, that sort of thing. If you're doing it from a protective space, as in you are holding the sort of power in the interaction, meaning you're not going to, the days of you curling up in your mother's arms and hugging her and burying your head in her neck and crying are over. Right? That's not going to happen anymore. That doesn't happen with your girlfriend. And a lot of guys don't know this. They replace that affection they had from their mother when they were younger with the girl they're dating, and girls hate this. Because then they feel like they're mothering you, and that's not very attractive. So what you want to do is, instead, you want to focus more on maintaining that decision-making, maintaining that, that's, you know, I don't really want, when I say the aggressor, I don't really mean, obviously I don't mean that you're being aggressive. I mean that you're the one, you're the initiator. You're the one who's initiating all the
actor.
Yeah, the actor, exactly. The person who's doing, initiating the protection and providing for this woman. And when you are holding her, you're gonna be holding her in a way that is powerful. You know, not strong like you're squeezing her to death, but more like you're wrapping your arms around her. Anytime you make yourself feel small, short, tiny, weak, or lose control emotionally whenever you're around a girl, especially in an affectionate way. Now, as you get older, as you go through the interaction and you build a relationship, a strong relationship with a girl, you can actually lose control more emotionally over time. But in the beginning, you don't want to do this. In the beginning, you want to sort of hold your ground. And as long as you're doing that, you won't come across as clingy. You'll come across as being affectionate and powerful. So that's the major difference. Most guys, including myself, by the way, so that's how come I know this so well, is that when I realized that I was doing this wrong, I would like, I'd go to lay down with a girl at night, go to bed or whatever, and I would actually slide up on my pillow so my head is above her head. You know, like that's how aware I was of this. And I got super self-conscious of it for a while because I realized that I was just doing this so much, and I was trying to be tiny and like trying to feel safe and cuddly. Like, that's not really what my job was. My job was to make her feel safe and cuddly, and then for me to be that sort of rock for her to be safe around and for her to hold on to. So that's a really powerful concept and really important during relationship balance. And body language during relationship balance, like I said, again, it's going to be more focused on dominant body language and less on negative and positive body language. You're going to be giving more positive body language almost across the board, and more of your focus is going to be on you being dominant in general. And finally, you had a question that says, anytime you touch, hold, kiss, or kiss her, does that count as seduction? No, that's a really great question, though. It does not. If you hold her in a sort of, okay, anytime that your sexual energy is boosted and you feel aroused, that's seduction when you're in a relationship. So because there's no barrier really holding either of you back from consummating sex and, like, you know, being sexual with each other, then the seduction stage is more of actual direct sexual teasing, where you are saying things to her directly, like what you're going to do to her later, what you've been thinking about, you know, taking pictures and sending them to her, asking her to take pictures and send it back to you, that kind of stuff, sort of keeping that naughtiness and secrecy of, you know, of your sexual relationship almost in a public place, like where you're having dinner and you're playing footsies under the table, that kind of thing. So while you're doing that, that's a seduction phase with the woman that you're with. But just like holding her hand does not mean that you're in seduction. You know, just touching her face does not mean you're in seduction. Because you can be holding her hand and saying, I love you, and everything in a relationship, and be in rapport, because that's a deep emotional connection. You know, I love you is a deep emotional connection. So because the physical barriers have been broken at this point, all of the touch is open, unless there's some kind of situation where you can't touch, like, you know, she's at work and she's professional and you can't do that because you're coming to visit and, you know, whatever it is. Hopefully there is no situation where that is the case, but if you do find a relationship where most of the time you can't touch the girl that you're with, then there's a big problem, and that can actually cause a serious rift in the relationship. So keep that in mind. But those are great questions, Jonathan. I appreciate you asking those. So if you have any more, go ahead and ping me. If that did help too, go ahead and send me a note and just let me know that that helped and you got something out of that, and that you learned something there and that your questions were answered. If not, I want to know that too, but just go ahead and pop in the Q&A section here and just let me know if that helped. So I'm going to go ahead and take, Brad, why don't we take one more question, then we'll get back to the coursework and go over the new concepts. Why don't you take the first, we have two parts of Eddie's question here. Why don't you take part one of Eddie's question?
All right. Hi, Brad. Hi, Josh. I cannot move forward as I cannot figure out the very important trait, whether I am introvert or extrovert. The way the description is worded, well, anyone is peopled out. I want to be alone.
Yep.
I do not hibernate, but also get fired up when engaging somebody. I read you should revert to your childhood way of thinking if you're having difficulties.
Okay. So, well,
basically, he wants to know if he's
whether he's
introvert
an introvert or extrovert. Okay. So, Eddie, the best way to find out whether or not you're an introvert or extrovert is to ask yourself, and by the way, you can be somewhere in the middle, so if you are in the middle, no big deal. Just accept that and be okay with it. But you want to figure out which side you're leaning toward. If you think while you're talking, it's very likely that you're an extrovert. If you think before you talk, it's very likely that you're an introvert. So I'm an extrovert. I can start a sentence and have no idea how I'm going to end it. And I'll just start talking by the end or middle of the sentence. I've got the whole idea fleshed out. You know, that's just kind of how it is. And it gets to the point where I'm not even thinking about what I'm saying at all, which means that sometimes I put my foot in my mouth. Right, and this is a classic, you know, classic extroverted problem. So, from your perspective, you have to ask yourself: do you more often think while you're talking or think before you're talking? And that's going to help you out a whole lot. Introverts, like I said, think before they talk almost exclusively, and extroverts think while they're talking. So keep that in mind. That should help you out a little bit, and then we'll get to your second part of your question later on during this call here. Brad, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, there's a lot of things about introvert and extrovert, but that's probably that's a really good way to look at it. I mean, obviously, it seems like he knows about the recharging thing.
Yeah. Well, just in case people are on the call and they don't know, will you go ahead and talk about the recharging thing for him?
Yeah, that's basically, you know, the idea that if you're introverted, you like to recharge when you're feeling sort of exhausted. You know, mentally, you like to recharge by being alone. You know, I'm introverted, so typically the best way for me to recharge is to like listen to music by myself for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're extroverted, then you want to recharge by talking to people. So, you know, anything from calling somebody on the phone to just going to the coffee shop or something, just to be around people and to like just start up conversations with anybody.
Right.
That like will actually get you charged up.
Right. Well, there's something else that's really important as well, is that anytime anybody can be peopled out, and anybody can be can have a desire to go be around people at the same time. Like introverts can sometimes do this too. Like if I am talking at somebody for a long period of time and I feel a lot of pressure to keep talking, I don't want to be around anybody after that. Like I'm just totally peopled out. I don't want to have to talk to anyone. I want to be by myself or just with my girlfriend and just like off doing my own thing, right? I need to recharge that way. But that's very rare that happens to me. It's more often than not, and this is really what you need to look to, is which one happens more often. More often than not, I'm wanting to be around somebody. When I'm by myself, I kind of get a little freaked out and I want to call somebody up or talk to them, that sort of thing. So I am definitely, I'm like textbook extroverted. Brad,
you're
very textbook introverted too, which is great. It's funny because a lot of people think that introverted means that you are not sociable or social in general,
right.
And that is not the case at all. That's
the first step in figuring this out is to really put aside anything that you think about what it means to be introverted or extroverted.
Right.
You know, because there's so much you know, connotation built around those words. That just gets kind of passed around recklessly.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it almost is as if the personality type rule book was written by extroverts. You know, and it's it's like, oh, introverts. And you look at a description sometimes, it'll be like reclusive.
Exactly.
Anger quickly. Have no friends. Like, it's like terrible. Right. Like, that's not true at all, man. It's like absolutely ridiculous.
Jay and I were talking about that recently, and he was saying that our society sort of seems to value extrovertedness, you know? Like, you seem like you're doing well in society if you have extroverted traits.
Right.
But the flip side for me, you know, obviously extroverts like to talk to lots and lots of people, and but the flip side for that, as far as how introverts have friends, they have really close relationships with close friends. That's what they value more often. I mean, like you said, as you start to just build your social skills and everything, like I've actually started to go back and think, was I ever introverted? You know, like maybe I was extroverted from the beginning, because now, you know, now that I've gotten so much better at talking to people, talking to strangers, and enjoying that experience, I've started to rethink the whole thing. And I do think that I'm naturally introverted, but I'm starting to build these sort of extroverted skills and you know, things that extroverts naturally enjoy. I enjoy them too now. So I've just noticed that. So.
Yeah, well, you know, what happens is you're naturally strong in the one that you lean toward because you prefer it. That's what Myers-Briggs typing is. It's which one you prefer. And your preference is to recharge alone. That's just how it is. So over time, you can shift it, but your preference usually stays the same. You know?
Yep.
Though we can learn to enjoy other things. Like, I really have learned to enjoy over time, really learned to enjoy being alone, because I did Kung Fu for a very long period of time, and that during that time I was able to appreciate solitude, and I was living by myself, that kind of stuff. And so I really appreciated that. I did a lot of self-growth during that time, but I also did a lot of wasting time as well, like sitting around doing nothing, which was interesting. And I definitely appreciate that still, and being alone still. But at the same time, my general preference, you know, you got to look back at it. If, you know, eventually it will blur. You're right, Brad. You know, eventually it gets blurry and you can't tell, and you have to fall back on other things. Definitely still true that you think before you talk. I mean, that's that's absolutely true.
I think anybody who listens to the calls can see the difference between the way that you talk and the way that I talk.
I could take offense to that, but I won't.
Really?
Yeah. No, I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding.
Oh.
It's funny because that leads us right into the next section here that I hadn't talked about yet. This is very advanced, so get out a pen and piece of paper. If you you probably have never heard me say this before, I'm guessing. Brett, you may have heard me say this before because you've heard everything. You've heard stuff that I haven't said yet, so that's just kind of how you are. But besides Brett, I think that definitely you want to pay attention to this next part. The most important area that I've found over time as being really powerful and impacting a relationship in a very serious way are the different types of personality types between you and the person you're dating. This is huge. This was a huge revelation for me. It took me until the past 3 years to figure this out. So in the past 3 years, I was studying, actually the past 2 years, I've been studying this concept of personality traits, and I've gotten in with some of the biggest and most powerful personality, Myers-Briggs typing and personality trait experts in the country. And I was able to talk to them and pick their brains about stuff and help them develop some things. In fact, because of them, I was able to create Hacking Attraction, which is probably my most advanced course yet released until I release the next couple of courses that are coming out. So, personality types, the couple of rules you need to know. First off, if you can learn how to personality type somebody, like a girl that you're talking to, then it's infinitely more helpful for you in the long term. As soon as you start getting serious with a girl and you start dating her, you know, not necessarily just exclusively, but also if you're going to be polyamorous and not exclusive in your relationship, then the next thing you need to do is figure out what their personality type is. You need to know your personality type too, and you need to be able to compare the two so that you can figure out where your major problems are going to be. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go over the four different areas of Myers-Briggs typing, just really briefly, not like in any kind of in-depth or anything. And I'm going to tell you, you can figure out which type you are. So as I go through this, write down, if you do know yours, already know your Myers-Briggs type, then go ahead and write it down. It should be a four-letter code. Mine's an ENTP is mine, which stands for extroverted, intuitive, thinker, perceiver. And because of that, I have a specific skill set. Brad, you are INFP, right?
Yes.
INFP. It's funny because I don't remember your personality type, but if I think about you, if I had to guess what those would be, that's what it is, right?
Yeah, after you start paying attention to this stuff, it starts to just, you can just listen to things that people say, you know, phrases that certain types of people say more often than other types, or ideals that they have that, you know, part of the population has. Like, everybody, the population is kind of divided on two different levels in these four different ways. So, well, you guys will see as Joshua explains it more. But
yeah, but it's true. I mean, it's as if, this is probably the most brilliant system that I've seen created already. This is one of Carl Jung's theories, and it sparked a lot of interesting concepts and a lot of controversy in the beginning. I had a problem with it in the beginning because I feel like it's putting people in a box, but once I was able to get past that, I recognized the beauty and the power behind it. So
it's more like learning to speak a language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's like saying, well, I don't want to think that German people speak just German because that would be putting them in a box, you know?
Right.
I thought the same thing when we first started discussing personality types, but now that I've gotten to be more sort of fluent in all of the different languages, mm-hmm. I see it that way. Like introverts speak introvert and extroverts speak extrovert. Mm-hmm. And when you learn to cater your own behavior and speech to speak their language, they just understand you, they feel you, they, you know, appreciate what you say so much more.
And that's exactly what we're going to get to today, because if you can do that to the girl that you're dating, then obviously that's a very powerful thing. You can learn how to speak her language. And in the beginning, depending on how far apart you are on the scale, it can be so painful to figure this out, like to actually speak other languages, because it's not what you want to do. It's not how you naturally think. And we think that these thought processes that we have are specific to us, but the truth is that they're not. They're specific to our personality type. And other people who are like us have similar personality types, which is really interesting. So let's go over the first area, introvert, extrovert. We kind of went over that already. If you are like to recharge alone and you think before you talk, you're an introvert. If you like to recharge around other people and you think while you're talking, you're an extrovert. So go ahead and write down I or E for introvert or extrovert real quick on a piece of paper or on a Word document or, you know, I don't know. Just don't do it. Don't carve it with a knife in your arm. You can do anything but that. So, next is a little bit more difficult. This is sensor and intuitive. About 75% of the population is sensor. About 25% is intuitive. Sensors take in information based on their senses. So they're really aware of what's around them typically. And intuitives take in information based on patterns. This is a very, very big difference. Now, the way you can tell is kind of hard, actually. But for the most part, if you ask yourself this question, you answer it as honestly as possible, you can get a pretty good read on it. And that is, would you say that for most of your life you felt like you found a place to fit in, or you've always felt like you were kind of an alien? Now, if you've always felt like you were kind of an alien, you are very likely you're an intuitive. If you've always kind of found a place to fit in, it's very likely that you're a sensor. Now, just be honest with this. I know there's a lot of like stigma around, like, whenever I found this out, and I was like, oh, well, I always felt like an alien, but maybe I'm just saying that because I want to be different, you know? But typically, if you want to be different or you value difference, it's because you felt like an alien your whole life. And so you like found that out through time and figured out that it's okay for you to be different because you are different already. So just kind of follow your heart on this and just say whatever comes to mind. And write it down. I'm an intuitive. Brad, you're an intuitive. I have a lot of really great friends that are sensors. You know, just whatever it is, put it down, and we'll move on. So sensor, put an S, and intuitives, put an N, and because you can't put I, because that's introverted. So moving on, the next one is how you make decisions. This is whether or not you make decisions based on logic, or whether or not you make decisions based on gut feeling. Now, this is easily mixed up because a lot of people who are feelers, who make decisions based on feeling, they kind of feel like they're doing something wrong, or they're not really sure if they're going one way or another. They're trying to feel it out to see whether or not they are. It's okay that they're a feeler. And thinkers are typically overthinking this. So it's kind of funny how that works. But but you want to just go with whatever your gut, well, your gut feeling, I guess, if you're a feeler. And whatever comes to mind, whatever you think the most honest answer is, you want to go with that one. So I'm a thinker, meaning I make decisions based on logic almost exclusively. I used to make a lot more emotional decisions when I was younger, but the truth is I felt like I was kind of betraying myself whenever I was doing that. So it feels a lot more comfortable when I make decisions based on logic. Now, a lot of people think they're making decisions based on logic, but about half the population is not. They're making decisions based on gut feeling, which can be a lot more powerful because it's your subconscious mind making the decision, not your conscious mind, which can only process one bit for every 10,000 bits that your subconscious mind can. So it's kind of like the difference between a feeler has a supercomputer making decisions and a thinker has, you know, a six-year-old compared to a supercomputer. It's really, or like a, you know, and like one of the first IBM computers. A calculator. A TI-86.
Yeah.
Texas Instrument. So that's that. So write down T if you're a thinker and F if you're a feeler. And then finally, there is, this is probably the easiest one. Are you typically on time or early for stuff? Not work-related, because if it's work-related, then you obviously want to be on time all the time, so you feel bad for this. So just in general, are you typically on time or early to stuff? Like if your friend wants to meet you in 5 minutes at a cafe, are you like there in 5 minutes or like there before 5 minutes from now? Or are you strolling up 10 minutes later because you know they don't care? If you are on time or early to stuff almost all the time, then that means that you are what's called a judger. It doesn't mean you judge people. It just means that that's what Jung called it. He called it a judger mentality. And if you are typically late, you are what's called a perceiver. So if you're a judger, write down J. If you're a perceiver, write down P. So now you have a four-letter code that is your personality type. And there's some really amazing things that can come out of this. Brett, I believe I got on the horn with you for a little while and talked to you a little bit about the superpowers of your personality type because we did some phone coaching together a while ago. And it's really powerful to know this stuff because you can then begin to understand the way you're thinking is not wrong. But more importantly, you begin to understand the way that other people are thinking is not wrong. It's just their personality type. So it's the quicker you can personality type somebody, the quicker you can speak their language. Meaning that if you can walk up to a girl and within 5 minutes figure out her personality type just by talking to her, you can begin to speak a language that makes her feel completely comfortable and at ease with within a matter of seconds, or you know, sometimes seconds if you're really good, minutes if you're kind of mediocre at it, and you know, it could take 30, 45 minutes if you're not so good at it. But you can figure it out. And this is really important for relationships because most relationships are one of two different types of relationships. They are very, very, very similar, as in, you know, I'm an ENTP, it would be like me dating an INTP, or an INFP, something like that, or an ENTP, of course, or your exact opposites, or very close to it. That'd be like, I'm an ENTP, it's like me dating an ISFP, which would be very close to my opposite, or ISFJ, which is my exact opposite, or the girl that I am dating now, which is an INFJ, which is almost my exact opposite, except we have that intuitive thing together. So it's important to note what things you have in common and what things you have completely opposite whenever you're dating. If you're dating someone who is close to the exact opposite of you, polar opposite of you on this scale, then it's very likely that it's going to be very tough in the beginning of your relationship, but get very, very easy later on in the relationship. That's what's called a growth-based relationship. These are really powerful. A lot of power couples who end up being multimillionaires are completely opposite or very close to opposite, polar opposing Myers-Briggs types. And the other side is very, very similar, and this is where things are very easy in the beginning, but begin to fall apart over time if you don't watch out. So these are, depending on who you are, these can be very fulfilling or very unfulfilling. So here's my suggestion. If you have an S, as in you're a sensor, meaning that the second letter that you have, that's an S, then I recommend that you date somebody who is closer to your personality type. It doesn't have to be exactly the same, but closer. And if you have an N there, I recommend that you date somebody who is very different than your personality type, because they'll show you other things that you didn't know about yourself. Now, the reason why that is because the world's sort of built for sensors. The world is, you know, the world of go to school, get a job, work at the job until you get to the top, run the business however you run it, and then take a retirement, that kind of thing. And you know, the idea of resumes and all that stuff, the working world is very much built for sensors. Intuitives are sort of cast out in a lot of ways when they're younger, and then revered a lot when they get older if they make it to that age. Most intuitives give up, because they just feel so alienated for such a long period of time, or they become depressed, that kind of thing. So they have a really hard time coping. I felt crazy for a long time too until I figured out what this was. Intuitives, because they spend most of their life struggling and trying to find new ways to fit in, new things to learn, because they feel outcast, tend to lean toward relationships that are more opposing, as in have completely different personality types than they do. So if you are dating someone who is an intuitive and you're an intuitive, try to have everything else being close to opposite. If you're dating someone who is a sensor and you're a sensor, try to have everything else be close to being the same as you. Also, if you are a sensor and you're dating an intuitive, you're going to have to be extremely sensitive to their tendency to alienate themselves. Like, they will always want to feel like they are different or something, and always kind of think that you don't like them, and there'll be a lot of little issues that they're going to run into. And if you're an intuitive and you're dating a sensor, you're going to have to remember that they don't see the same things that you do. So things that are obvious to an intuitive are not obvious to a sensor, like patterns that I see now in my world around me. Because I'm an intuitive, I see these patterns often and almost everywhere, and most sensors don't see them, which is why, you know, probably a good 90% of my followers are sensors, because they see me seeing these patterns and they want to know them because they don't have that natural ability to see patterns like I do. So really powerful thing. I wanted to go over that. I didn't cover that in the past couple of calls because it was such an in-depth and advanced concept, so I want to talk about that now. So keep a note on that. Brad, do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, that was pretty good.
Okay, well then.
I like the talking about how the world is sort of built for sensors.
That's because you're an intuitive. That's why you like it. I knew it.
Another way that I've sort of noticed that is that intuitives are like the big picture, like whole forest people, and sensors are like
detailed,
the path in front of them. Yeah, they're details people.
Yeah.
So sensors are usually like, well, obviously I'm going to do that thing because it works, right?
Right.
But intuitives are like, yeah, but why are you doing that thing?
Right. So it can be kind of this big battle in a lot of ways. And I think that what ends up happening as intuitives get older, and we got to watch out for this too in general, is that intuitives begin to think that sensors are wrong, and sensors begin to think that intuitives are wrong. And so we got to, you know, part of my study, it was me accepting that both sides are completely valid, and I need both sides to understand. Otherwise, I won't really be able to communicate and get anything done. So that's one of the reasons why, like, I love talking about big picture stuff, and I love just giving overviews and like the system behind the system kind of stuff, and I love doing that. But the truth is, I can't just teach that stuff outright. I have to give a lot of actionable how-to steps in order for people to understand, because where I could just come out and say, walk up to a girl, smile, stick your hand out, spin around in circles, and then turn your back, count to three, then turn back around and smile again, and say that she's trouble. You know, that's like I've done that thousands of times. Must have been maybe tens of thousands of times for girls. That exact sequence in that order. But the reason why I do it is because I know how it works. I know why it works. So I end up started teaching, like, when I first started getting into coaching, I would teach guys the why first, and then, or only, and guys were like, God, just tell me what to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just want to know what to do. So I ended up being able to integrate that eventually and realized that wasn't wrong. So really huge deal. So if you are dating someone, or if you're looking, you're kind of hooking up with some girls, try to personality type them, or, you know, ask them these questions that I asked you today. You can come back and you can listen to this later on and make sure that you have all the questions right. And just, like, make sure that you understand where they're coming from so that you can match their state of mind, so to speak. So that's that. Let's move on to the next section here so we can kind of get going. The next thing I want to talk about is oxytocin. I briefly went over this before, so I'm only going to touch on this for a second. Oxytocin is a chemical, it's sort of the love chemical in your brain. Women experience a rush of oxytocin whenever they reach orgasm. This is very, very important for you to note, because the more you make a woman come or, you know, have an orgasm, the more she's going to feel attached to you and sort of clingy to you and needing you in the relationship. Sex is a very important part of a relationship. Obviously, it's about one third of the relationship is sex, and not as far as time is concerned. Not one third of your time is spent having sex. If that's the case, you're a machine. But and I need to take notes from you. But one third of the importance of your relationship is based around sex. And of course, sex isn't all about orgasm, especially for women. It's not really about that at all. But it is important because it does create powerful bonding agents between you and the person that you're with, especially if you can make her sort of come and have her reach orgasm with you. Now, the important thing to know about sex with women, and I'm going to, as opposed to sex with men, but you know, as guys, we don't really give a shit that much about the experience of sex. I mean, we like it, and as we get older, we tend to like it a little bit more, actually. But it's more important for us just to kind of get in there and, like, you know, we want to come, like, we want to get our rocks off, basically. And that's a natural thought. Like, we just want to get in, you know, have an orgasm and then leave. You know, like, what are you still doing here? You know, this is a classic. What was it? Charlie Sheen or Martin Sheen? I think it was Charlie Sheen, probably, given who he is, where he was caught with the prostitute. Did you hear about this, Brad?
I did not, no.
This is, you know, probably must have been years ago. He was caught with a prostitute, and they were interviewing him afterwards this newspaper, I think a channel or newspaper was interviewing him. And this woman was like, you know, you're Charlie Sheen. You're good-looking. You're very successful. You've got a ton of money. You're a great actor. Everyone knows who you are. Everyone likes you, you know. How come you're paying for sex? And he was like, whoa. I just want to clear this up. I'm not paying for girls to come over and sleep with me. I'm paying for them to leave. And that was his response. And that's completely valid, you know, because as guys, most guys are focused, and we are focused more on getting in, having sex. And then we have this feeling like, I want to get out of bed now and kind of go be by myself or hang out with my friends, you know.
Or go, like, do something productive.
Exactly. Like, we don't want to sit there and cuddle as much, you know. And I've had to, like, learn how to quiet that dragon within me over time. Because I, you know, my tendency, it's not very attractive for, you know, for you to be with a girl, you know, all, like, personal and sexual and, like, all loving and everything, and then you come and you're like, all right, get off me, bitch. I'm going to go to the living room, make a sandwich, and watch TV, bye. You know? Like, I'm going to go play Call of Duty. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So, like, that's just, you can't do that. That's not going to work. Because women need that chemical oxytocin actually connects them to you, and that makes them more sort of needy, makes them invest more in their relationship, makes them love you more. So it's important, very, very important that you know how to make a girl come. And if I had to give you the sort of 1-2 punch on this, and, like, really briefly, how to make any girl reach orgasm, it's relatively simple. First off, you can't try. Like, you can't be doing something to make her come. You cannot do that. That will not work for women. You have to, or she might fake it, but she will almost never actually reach orgasm. If you're having sex with a girl and you want her to come, you have to enjoy the sex a lot yourself, because women get off on watching you enjoy the sex, right? So you don't want to go too fast, because it'll make you come first. That's the only other thing that I learned over time. You want to go slow. And you want to make sure she has lots of clitoral stimulation, meaning that she's probably going to rub her clit on your body as you're having sex. As long as that's happening, then you'll probably make her come, you know. But you cannot focus on thinking about making her come. If you're, like, going down into it and then you're looking up every once in a while to see whether or not she likes it, she's going to be so turned off, dude. It's a terrible idea. And I used to do this, which is why I know this. This is a terrible thing to do. Instead, you have to just be fully invested in whatever it is that you're doing. Just really love it. Because at the end of the day, women like the experience of sex. They don't really care as much about reaching orgasm. So when they're, like, fully in the experience of sex, then they can reach orgasm. If they're having a lot of stress around, like, trying to come to satisfy you so that you know that that she likes you in bed, that you're not, like, some failure in bed, if you're trying to focus on that too much, then she'll begin to get really nervous and scared, and, like, she'll begin to think that... that, you know, if you don't think that she came, that you're gonna feel bad, or you're gonna think that you're not good enough, that kind of stuff. So she'll end up faking orgasm. And there's nothing worse than finding out that a girl was faking orgasm. with you. And if you've slept with more than two or three girls, I can almost guarantee you that at least one of them faked an orgasm at some point. That's just kind of how it is. I know, I'm sure it's happened to me. I've never found out, but I'm almost positive it's happened with me. You know, I mean, I you know, just statistically speaking, it has to have, you know. That's about all I'm going to talk about for that for now. But oxytocin is very, very important chemical, very important for sort of connecting people together, lovers together, and it is released when a woman reaches orgasm, so you're going to need to learn about that. Absolutely. I'm going to jump straight to one of my more advanced concepts that I don't believe I can't remember if I covered this in the Tao of Badass or not, actually, because it was such a massive topic. I may have just breezed over it. It's possible. And that is called the 6 Rules of Long-Term Attraction. Brad, do you know all these 6 rules?
They were not in the Tao of Badass, no. We've talked about them in conversation, but okay. I haven't studied them yet.
What is this conversation you speak of? Okay, so there are 6 rules of long-term attraction. This is a really interesting concept. You're not going to hear it anywhere at all ever except right here, because it took me years of psychology study and compiling these from different psychology or psychologists over time. And when I first got a hold of them, they were so cockamamie and ass backwards. It was ridiculous. It was one of the reasons why I decided that I needed to get in this field, is because it was so underdeveloped and over necessary. I mean, it was completely necessary as far as, you know, a study goes. You know, we have an area of psychology that affects 100% of the population, and yet is the most underdeveloped area of psychology in existence. So, I focused a lot on this, and over about a 3-year period, I studied just psychology textbooks, mostly psychology textbooks. And I was searching for the following 6 items. Originally, I had 7, but then I realized that one of them was just 2 versions of the same thing. Or 2 of them were 2 versions of the same thing, so I just combined them. And I want to go over those now. So if you have a pen, paper, I implore you to write this down. It's a very, very important concept. And like I said, you'll never hear it anywhere but here and from me, unless someone heard it from me and is teaching it. So I'm going to go over these 6 rules of long-term attraction, and I'm going to go over what they really mean. I'm not just going to go over the things that I learned, but also whenever I added my own development and my own study and research to this, how I was able to come to certain conclusions on these were to be pretty definitive and were pretty amazing. And a couple of them actually led me to there are 2, I think, that are more important than any others. So there are 2 specifically that changed the way I look at everything when it comes to attracting women. And I'll get to those last. So the first 4 are going to be a little bit lighter, but take note on them anyway. One of them I actually used one concept. The reason why I figured this out is because I used one of these concepts only to discover polyamory and polydating. So I took one concept and I used it and applied it to attract women, and it instantly made tons and tons of women attracted to me without me having to do anything. Not anything related to attraction, at least. I was doing something completely different. It wasn't even, had nothing to do with attraction whatsoever, and talking to women or approaching women, none of that stuff. And all of a sudden, I had tons of women in my life that were all sleeping with me and all attracted to me. And I want that for you, too. So I'm going to go ahead and, I'm not saying it's to impress you. I'm just saying it to impress upon you how important these concepts are. So,
did you come up with that phrase?
I did not. No, it's a very powerful, awesome thing to say.
Fucking brilliant.
I wish I had. I wish I could take credit for that, but I can't. I mean, I could, but I'd be lying. So let's go over the first one. The first one is chemical attraction. Chemical attraction is what most people refer to as chemistry, right? They say, oh, I have, you know, when girls say, I have good chemistry with him. Actually, when they say I have good chemistry, they don't actually mean chemistry at all. They don't mean chemical attraction. What they actually mean is rapport. They mean that it's easy to talk to them. In fact, most of chemistry, quote unquote, is someone who has a similar personality type to you, because it's easy to talk to them. So it seems like you have good chemistry, right? That's how it works. So it's not even sexual in nature, but there is an element of chemical attraction that is very important, and there's something you can do to create, to sort of have it sort of behind the scenes, have it so that more women are attracted to you without you having to do anything, just in general, just by making sure your chemicals are in alignment. So I'm going to go ahead and go over that right now. Chemical attraction is, though we've never fully found and discovered a human pheromone, I mean, it's never been proven. I mean, there's been plenty of studies, and there've been a lot of, you know, pheromone colognes and stuff that claim to be to attract women. But the truth is that none of them have been proven to work because we've never found the human pheromone. Where it used to, you know, in most animals, there's a pretty obvious pheromone that attracts the opposite sex. But within humans, it's a lot more muffled. But we do have our pheromone sensing ability, and that is called your olfactory sense. Your olfactory sense is sort of a sense of smell that is subconscious. So you have your conscious sense of smell. You smell something, and you're like, oh, it smells like raisins, right? But your olfactory will take that smell and turn it into an emotion. So you feel something, right? It speaks directly to your emotions. Now, everyone has these, men and women both. There was a study popularly known as the Dirty Shirt Study. And you may have heard of this before. I forgot what college did this at the time. There have been several studies and recreations of this, and they all had the same outcome. So it's a pretty definitive study. Where they had taken a group of subjects, women, and they sat them in a room. And they had a group of guys who were all different shapes, sizes, different levels of testosterone. They measured all their levels of testosterone. They took pictures of all of them and everything. And they are all the same size shirt. And they had them wear these shirts for about, you know, 6 hours or so, just doing their normal stuff they do throughout the day. And they came back, they took the shirt off, put it down, put their normal shirt on, they left, right? So the women came in, and they'd sit them down in the room, and they'd take them one at a time, and they'd walk them through these shirts. And they'd have them smell each shirt directly, and then rate them as far as which ones they liked the most, the smells they liked the most. So they were going through, and they found some really interesting things. The first time they did this, they found that all of the women who smelled the shirt of the guy who had the most masculine features were attracted to that shirt more than any other shirt, meaning that he actually had a higher testosterone level than all the rest of the guys did, and the women were drawn to that with their olfactory. It's a really powerful concept that that's the case, that you actually have a level of testosterone that as it increases, you will begin to attract more women.
This is actually really pertinent because Brett just posted in the members area today asking if anybody knew of ways to increase testosterone. Mm-hmm. And we actually got some really informed responses from some other members in the community. So You guys will definitely have to check out that post that Brett made. There's 12 comments so far. So.
You know, there is a testosterone boosting supplement that's safe, and I've had it actually in my cabinet for a long time. I've never taken it because I know that if I take testosterone right now before, like if I do it, my hair's gonna fall out because I naturally have like male pattern baldness. So if I take more testosterone, it's gonna rapidly increase the my hair loss whenever I do that. So I haven't taken it, and I think I'm okay for right now. But I definitely think that some guys who, especially if you eat a lot of foods that increase estrogen, like soy, a lot of foods that have soy in them will increase your estrogen. There are a lot of other foods that do this too. And it can actually lower your sex drive and do a lot of weird things to your body, make you really emotional, stuff like that. And it makes it really hard. It'll make it really hard for you to sort of stay in your gender role if you don't have a balance of testosterone. Now, my recommendation typically is just to change your eating habits, you know? Like I eat a lot of red meat now, and that helps balance my testosterone, that kind of thing. So the things that when you eat, you feel more powerful, those are usually boosting your testosterone. But either way, the more testosterone you have in your system, the more likely it is that women are going to be attracted to you just from their olfactory sense. But this plays a small part. Chemical attraction plays a very small part. Now, the other interesting study that they did is they took this and they said, they broke it down, and they had women who were menstruating versus women who weren't, and they had them come in one time and then come back again when they were menstruating and do it again. And when they came in, it was more of a spread. Like they had, you know, a little more attraction to a couple shirts. But when they came back and they were menstruating, they were very attracted to the shirt of the guy with the most testosterone, like almost overwhelmingly attracted to that guy, which is very interesting. It suggested a lot of things. It suggested that a lot of women would prefer to mate with, so to speak, a guy who has a lot of testosterone and then go back and get nurturing from a guy who has less testosterone, sort of had the father be another male, you know? And that's a really interesting concept for our species to accept. And as you might imagine, a lot of people didn't take that very lightly. they didn't like that very much. But that's just the case. So keep that in mind. The way to get your chemicals in balance, for sure, the most important way, across the board, that was most unattractive was stale chemicals. And that chemicals come across mostly in your sweat. And so what you have to do is sweat often. Like if you're not active and working out, if you're not, it's not necessarily just sweating, but you have to be active. And when you do that, it'll push out all the old chemicals and sort of have new ones and fresh chemicals. And that's across the board more attractive to women than stale chemicals are. So keep that in mind. If you don't have an active life right now, I highly suggest you find something active that you like to do and not just going to the gym. Like, you know, like I surf or rock climb, stuff like that. That helps keep me in balance. So very, very important to do stuff like that. That's something that you actually enjoy doing. That way you don't have to convince yourself to do it constantly.
Brett actually has his hand up too.
Oh, okay. Cool. Brett, you want to go ahead? I'll go ahead and mute you now because it's probably on topic. Go ahead, Brett.
Yeah. I brought that topic up on the board is because I was wondering if you use supplements to either replace or to induce testosterone levels, would that be a different result of like the test that you're talking about?
Yeah, it would. Well, you'd have if you're supplementing testosterone or basically it doesn't supplement testosterone. It triggers the increase in testosterone, so it just triggers something inside your body to create more testosterone. What we'll do is we'll go ahead and put it in the resources section, Brad. So guys can check it out, because I didn't post it at first, Brett, because I wasn't really sure how many guys would be interested in it. But I have a recommendation for it. I have a bottle here. I know it's safe. I've talked to a lot of people about it who are experts at this, diet and nutrition and everything, and they've all said, yeah, this is perfectly safe, and there are some that aren't, so you got to be really careful about that.
Well,
okay?
My brother works for the DEA, and he's a forensic chemist for them, and he does a lot of testing on those stuff, so... Mm-hmm. He told me basically anything that's got testosterone in it is actually illegal unless it's given to you by a doctor. So
right. You can't have testosterone in a supplement. You can only have a supplement that triggers testosterone release. Because if it has testosterone in it, it actually will screw you up. That's exactly what people are afraid of, you know? So it can be a big problem. But yeah, so instead of like having it so that, you know, and bodybuilders have been doing this forever, you know, because it helps increase muscles and everything, a muscle and everything too. But it does a lot of great stuff for you if you are feeling kind of like emotional stuff and you're out of your head. Testosterone will kind of help you out a lot. But at the same time, I don't really know, you know, I would think about it, try it out and see if it helps you. You know, just like get a bottle or something and then try it out and see if it helps you. We'll post a link to it in the members area and then you guys can grab it if you want. And then if you like it, just keep getting more and then continue then, you know, as long as you feel comfortable. I'd love also, if you guys do it, I'd love to see the results from it too. Like, I'd love to see you guys post how much better you feel, if you feel better, if you feel worse, whatever, just to let everybody know. If a lot of people feel worse, I'm obviously not going to recommend it anymore because I don't want that to happen. But lots of people are using this specific supplement. I don't trust anything else but this one because I know the guy who put the whole thing together, and he's a huge nutrition guy and very, 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 very smart. He's a genius. So anyway, yeah, I'll post it in there, Brett, and you can check it out. And you're right for being kind of cautious around it, though, for sure. So, cool. I'm going to go ahead and mute you again here. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next section here, the next of the six, because we're kind of running out of time, so I'm going to get to that. The next one's pretty obvious. This is the stuff that we see all the time, and it's called sociobiological. Sociobiological, which is SOCIO-biological. So if you want to write that down, that's what you can write. Sociobiological, and sociobiological attraction is the attraction that is like visceral, that is based on looks. Like she's got big tits, or a big ass, or wide childbearing hips, or big eyes, you know, or a big mouth. You know, or big lips, full lips, that kind of stuff. I don't know if big mouth is a big deal, but full lips is definitely a big deal. So these are qualities that women typically try to play up with, like exercise and, you know, makeup, lipstick, stuff like that. They try to emphasize these different sociobiological qualities. These are the things that you see, like, everywhere, really obvious stuff, because it creates attraction. This is stuff that we look at for reproduction and survival of our species. Really obvious stuff. So you already know about that. That's pretty clear for guys. The boxier, like the broader your shoulders are, as long as your waist is proportionate. So there's a really great program. Brad, what is it called again? It's called the Adonis Effect or Adonis Method. Let me just see if I can find it real quick. ADONIS. I think it's called the Adonis. Oh, your Adonis Index. That's what it's called. And I think the website is adoniseffect.com. And you can go on there and you can see, you can type in your height and your waist, and it will... Shit. This thing started playing automatically. So I'm on the website right now. You type in your height and your waist, and it'll tell you your perfect proportions for your body type. And this is really, really crucial for your body type, because every person who has a different size waist and shoulders needs to have a good proportion for those two. It's based on a lot of really amazing research from forever ago. Actually, it's all based on the golden ratio, which is a concept that repeats in nature over time. Oops, I think I may have closed the recording. One second. Da-da-da-da-da. Let me just make sure I get this recording. Oh, it's still going. Okay, cool. It will increase. Oh, sorry. It's been repeated over time in sunflowers that go in the golden ratio, like the way the seeds are placed in the golden ratio, the way leaves come up on a plant are in the golden ratio, or the seashells, like the nautilus seashell you see. It gets smaller based on the golden ratio. It repeats specifically over time in all of history and all of nature. And it's the same thing for women. We've done a lot of studies to figure out that women are actually attracted to the golden ratio from shoulders to hips ratio in men. So if you can find your Adonis index, if you go to adoniseffect.com, you can do that there. I believe it's free for you to figure it out. And you can build yourself into that shape, then you are much more likely to be attractive to women. This is a really important thing, actually. And you'll feel a lot more confident when you do it, too. But both of those are pretty much physical. Let's move on to the not-so-physical ones. The next one is familiarity. Familiarity is a concept that the more you see somebody in a similar situation every time you see them, the more you see them in a similar situation, the more attracted you become to them. And this is a really cool concept. Basically, it states that if you walk by a cafe every day for the next month, and you see the same girl sitting in the cafe working on her computer or doing something, you're more likely to be attracted to that girl versus even a brand new girl that looks a little bit better than she does, because you have familiarity with her. And in fact, it's even more powerful with women. Women are going to be more attracted to a guy they see more often doing the same thing, because they feel like he's more consistent and he has something that is more reliable than a guy who they see once and then is sporadic and gone or whatever, you know. So if they see you doing the same thing constantly, then they'll be more attracted to you over time. They get more familiarity. And in fact, it's less about attraction here and more about subconscious rapport, to be honest, which is more what that's about. But so if you do want to take advantage of that, what's that?
Seems like it's worth going into rapport with you if you're actually going to be around.
Right, exactly. It's not going to be a waste of their time, for sure. But actually, it's funny, because what will create more intrigue is if they see you doing similar things. Like, if they see you at a cafe twice a week, and they also see you DJing twice a week or something. So it's like they get different scenarios, but it's still consistent. They can get more familiarity with you that way, too. They get to see that you have more of a normal life, basically, and that you're not some psycho killer. So that's important.
You're saying that people who are in the same cafe almost every day are psycho killers?
All of them, yeah. especially if their names are... start with a B. Okay. The next rule of long-term attraction is called propinquity. Propinquity is like a $10 word, which is why I didn't remember it for most of my life. But it basically means your social proximity. It means that originally they thought that propinquity was that you will date somebody in your social group, and you won't if they're not in your social group. But that's not true. The truth is that you're just much more likely to date someone within your social group because you don't have to leave your social group to date them. This is important. So a lot of women are more serious about this than men are, because women get protection from their social group. So if you have not joined their social group, as it's like you're not accepted by their group, then they are more likely to not date you. They'll be more likely to keep your relationship secret, that sort of thing, because you don't have that propinquity, that social proximity to them. It also means, and this is one of the things I used, this is the thing I used to create polyamory for myself, and that is, if you join as many social groups as possible, meaning that you're friends with, if you watch Ferris Bueller, there's this great line in Ferris Bueller where it's, you know, the assistant to the principal, I guess the assistant principal, is talking about, like, Ferris Bueller, and she's like, oh, everyone likes Ferris, you know, the jocks, the dweebs, the nerds, the sluts, you know, the blah, and she goes through this whole thing. Everyone thinks he's really cool, you know? That's exactly what I'm talking about. When you have propinquity working on your side, sort of in your favor, then you have a lot of social groups that have accepted you, and because they've accepted you, you have options for all the women within that social group. And this is really powerful. The most amazing thing I've learned to do is create what's called social ambassador status for myself. Social ambassador status is where you are the one person that overlaps all these different social groups. So everyone comes to you to find out about other people in other social groups and to be introduced. And you become the ambassador of everyone, which means now you reign and rule over all of the social groups at once. You have sort of the one ring to rule them all. And then the darkness bind them. So, very, very powerful concept. And I'll go into propinquities more some other time because we don't have time today. We're already pretty much out of time here. The final two are the most important, and they are similarities and reinforcement. Similarities states that you will date someone who has a similar insecurity level to you. Now, with women, you will find a very interesting concept. As you become more confident as a man, you will begin to attract more attractive women. But as you begin to increase your confidence over time, you'll hit a certain point where all of a sudden you're not attracting more attractive women. Instead, you are attracting more intelligent women. So they'll be just as attractive, but they'll become more intelligent over time. Or more mature, which is what happened to me, really. You become attracted to and you begin to attract more mature and intelligent women. And this is really powerful because it allows the women that you're actually attracted to fully, like deep down attracted to find you. Now, there are two ways of doing this. One is to have what's called mutual insecurities. And the other one's, or what's called common insecurities, which are the same insecurities. And then the other one is, Jesus, what is the word I'm thinking of? Common insecurities and complementary insecurities. That's the other one. Common insecurities is when you have the same insecurities, so you date each other because you feel comfortable. Like, you're both overweight, so you date each other because you know that you're not going to leave each other for someone else because you're both overweight, so no one wants you, right? That's kind of the thought. Or you're both really afraid of talking to people, so you hang out with each other so you can recluse together and be away from everybody else. These relationships almost always end because your relationship is based on comfort, not on growth. That's one of the things I found across the board that will break up a relationship, is that if your relationship is based on comfort, it will fail. If your relationship is based on growth, it will succeed. Almost across the board.
I just had a conversation about that.
Did you?
With someone who you know.
Okay, well then. It was my girlfriend, I'm guessing. No, I'm kidding. Kelsey, Evan, we need to tell you about this. Josh, he's not right for you. So what you want to do is you want to have complementary insecurities with the person that you're dating. Meaning that you want to date somebody who can help you overcome your insecurities, and that will succeed. If you do not, then it will fail, always. That's how it is. So keep that in mind. That's a really, really big one. Also, if you want to attract more attractive women, then all you have to do, honestly, is one by one overcome your fears and overcome your insecurities. My, I just did this the other day. I had, I went and got acupuncture for the first time, and I have the most unrealistic fear of needles. Like, so scared of needles. And I mean, I have tattoos, but that's not really the same. It's not really like a needle. They have like a gun and it, you can't really tell. But this is like a needle and it's sticking out of my leg or something. And when he first put the needles in my legs, I was freaking out. And I was breathing like super heavy and just, I had an anxiety attack. I wasn't like screaming or anything, but it was really hard for me to keep my focus. So, but after about 30 minutes of being exposed to them and getting acupuncture in a couple other places, I overcame that, you know, to a certain extent. I'm still going to be scared when I go back, but you know, I'm going back now. It's not so much about getting, you know, my body working properly through acupuncture. It's more about me facing my fear of needles, you know, and overcoming it. And as you do these and you face these insecurities, you will begin to attract more attractive women. And it will just happen to you. Trust me on this one. I've done it. And I've seen lots of guys do it too. It will work for you. Just focus on that, and that's like where most of your attention should be. It should be on getting over your own insecurities, and less on trying to attract women. This is a big secret that a lot of guys don't do because they just don't believe it. And I can't stress it enough how important it is to just focus on that. I mean, I did this for years. Chasing it does not work. If you work on yourself and you work on improving your own, getting over your insecurities, it happens a lot faster, I promise. So just a note. Finally, and this is the last one I'm going to go over for today, a concept called reinforcement. Reinforcement is the idea that there's always a student and a teacher in a relationship. A student and a teacher meaning that one person has a lot of value, the other person has less value, and sees this other person as being very valuable. So they come to them, they get this value from them, and then one of two things happens, typically. Well, one of three things happens. So we'll go over those three. Two of them means that your relationship ends. One of them means that it can last forever. So you have to remember this. The first is what's called the free bird theory, or free bird method. And that is when you both, when one person is a student under the other. So let's just take it. Let me get rid of the free bird theory for a second. Let's just talk about what happens. If you have a student and a teacher, let's say, one person who's learning under the other person most of the time, who one person has most of the value, the other person's there kind of getting that value. Then what eventually happens is the person who is gaining the value, meaning the student, will eventually become at par with or surpass the teacher because that's just what happens, right? So the teacher may be getting some kind of pleasure out of, you know, being the person who has all the value in the beginning and, you know, being a know-it-all, so to speak. And what ends up happening is the student begins to approach that level where they're almost at the same place as the teacher. Now, two things that ruin these relationships are as follows: free bird theory and cage bird theory. Free bird theory is where you have the teacher realizes the student is getting better, so they eventually let the student go and sort of break it off and go out and sort of enjoy the world and experience things and move on and blossom, you know, away from me now because it's time for you to move on. That's free bird theory. That's not good because you're not together after that, right? So it's really good for polyamory, really bad for monogamy. So again, one of the things that I really pay attention to whenever I'm getting into a relationship. The cage bird theory is evil. It's where, and we've all done this to some extent, or most of us have had it done to us too. I've had it done to me. And that is where the student begins to learn a lot and begins to become on par with the teacher. The teacher notices this and gets afraid because their value is about to go away. So they begin to feed the student false information, like insecurities, like you're not good enough, you're doing this wrong, you'll never get this right, no one's going to like you but me, like just basically brainwashing them. And this happens all the time in relationships, and it can be really, really psychologically abusive. It's really hard for the student to actually leave them because they believe this person has value, and they'd have to get rid of all the things that they've learned that helped them in order to trust this person again or in order to leave, right? So it ends up being a really abusive relationship. The only thing that works in reinforcement is what's called mutual reinforcement. That's where you're both students under each other, meaning you're both teachers to each other too. So if you're the person who's teaching the girl that you're with, or like you have most of the value in the relationship, which is not typically how it is for most guys, unfortunately, because most guys would like that to be the case. But if you are in that case, in that situation, you have to begin to draw out things that she can teach you that you can respect about her. If you don't do that, the relationship will end. Even though you're giving and giving and giving, and it all seems good on your end, it's not. It will fail. Absolutely. And if you are the one who's sort of the student in the situation and you want something from her, you have to begin to give her something. You have to begin to teach her things. You have to learn stuff and then show it to her that can be helpful for her, you know? Because then she'll begin to put you on equal with herself, and you'll begin to train underneath each other, sort of study underneath each other. That's called mutual reinforcement. And that's the only way to keep a relationship together over time. Again, it's a relationship based on growth, not on comfort, which a lot of people go for. So that is all I have time for today. I'll just briefly explain what my 30-day notice method is. Actually, the guy who taught me this is a guy named David D'Angelo, and he wrote a book called Double Your Dating, which is, you know, I've never read, but is highly acclaimed, one of the most talked about books that I've ever heard of in the dating space. And you know, it's very straightforward. It teaches guys how to do a lot of you know, approach work, stuff like that. And Double Your Dating, and David D'Angelo, rather, himself, just got married, and he's got a beautiful wife. I knew his wife before I knew him, actually, which is weird. And she told me that they have this rule, and it's called the 30-day notice rule. And that is where they cannot break up with each other or, you know, get divorced or split apart or anything like that unless they give 30 days notice ahead of time. Now, this has been, like, the most amazing concept ever for me, because there are times in which you want to run away from a relationship because it's scary or something bad's happening, or you start thinking about, well, this isn't going to work, whatever, because you're in a bad state of mind. And knowing that you have to give 30 days notice allows you to have time to cool down, right? So you could give your 30-day notice, and you could say, all right, I'm giving my 30 days notice. You could leave, but you can't date anybody else or hook up with anybody else, something like that, for 30 days until then. And in 30 days, then you still have to break up. If you're with somebody exclusively and you think that she's the one, I highly recommend you instill this in your relationship immediately as soon as you start dating her, because it is a very, very powerful concept. It helps sort of reframe how you think about running away from the relationship or staying with somebody. So I've been alluding to that this whole time, so I wanted to make sure for the past couple of calls, I wanted to make sure I covered it. So that's it. Let's go ahead and take some more questions, and then I got to split. Brad, are you cool with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. All right. So why don't you go ahead and start reading off the first one. We'll just go down the road here with Dan, and then we'll go through the rest of them. I think it's only 3 questions left, so let's go ahead and do that.
All right. I should probably try to have a Portuguese accent when I'm reading that.
I'm not sure if that would help or not, but...
Just kidding, Dan. All right. So he says, I've had many suggestions on how to get into state, but I'm finding that it has taken me a long time to get into a peak state, and it is very hard, or it's very hit and miss. What is the fastest and easiest way to get into peak state?
Cocaine. No, I'm kidding. So just so everyone knows what this means, state, like being in peak state means that you're feeling the groove, like you're out at a place that's probably a higher energy place, like a bar or something at nighttime, and you're not really feeling like you need to try to talk to anybody anymore. It's just kind of happening. The fastest and easiest way to get into peak state, hands down, is what's called the bar walk. And the bar walk is so spectacular. It's basically a series of places you walk to in a bar that allow you to get your state up and keep it up really fast. It takes about 30 minutes, and you have to do it as soon as you walk into a bar. If you do it later on, it won't work. So you have to do it as soon as you walk in. You have to go straight into doing this. And basically, I'll give you like the 1-2 punch for it. Walk in with purpose. Don't just like walk in, stand there, look around, whatever. You got to be really like lighthearted. I have a program called Attraction in Action that's coming out in the next couple of months here that is all about how to do exactly this and how to approach every single kind of girl in every situation you can think of. I broke it down, like really broke it down into really small details and everything. So it's a really great play-by-play sort of guide for that. So you can check that out when it comes out, definitely, Dan. But before then, if you want to get in a peak state, walk in. And just walk as if you know where you're going. Don't walk really fast, but just walk, smile, look around for a second. Don't stop, but just look around while you're walking for a second. And walk to the back and find the bathroom. As soon as you get there, just your only goal is to find the bathroom. Find the bathroom. If you have to go to the bathroom, do it. And then come back out, find the bar, grab a drink, right? And then I want you to explore every corner of this bar. Preferably if it is... kind of packed, there's a lot of people there, it'll take you probably 15 minutes to do this, because you're gonna have to takes a while to walk from one end of the bar to the other bar, end of the bar. And you can literally walk to the end of the bar, stand there, pull out your phone, look at it, and then put it back in your pocket and walk the other direction. That's all you gotta do. Do this for about until you've crossed the center of the bar area 3 or 4 times. Usually it takes about 30 minutes or so. And as you're doing this, make eye contact and smile and like chat with and do what's called drive-bys. Drive-bys are where you walk by and you say stuff like, hey, I'll be right back, to a girl you don't know, you know? And you just do that, like, hey, there you are. Oh, you're really cute. I'm going to come talk to you in a minute. That's it, right? You don't have to sit there. There's no pressure on approaching. There's no like, oh, she's going to like me, blah, blah. You don't have to worry about that stuff. You can just walk by, say that, and then keep going, you know? And you do this a few times, and then by the third or fourth time you've done it, it's easy, dude. Everyone who's in the bar has already seen you. They've already seen you come by several times. And so they're already curious about who you are, and you've already approached and opened up, you know, 10, 15 women in this bar, groups of women even. And what that allows you to do is create pockets of people who know you or feel comfortable with you, and then you'll be in peak state after that. So that's the easiest way to do it. And guys, if you haven't done that yet, I highly recommend that you do it. It's a really powerful thing to do, so check it out. Go ahead, Brad. You want to go to the next one?
Yes.
Yes.
The next one is from Dan as well. How can I eliminate approach anxiety from my everyday life so that I do not even think about whether or not to approach women that pass me by?
Brad, do you want to answer this?
The long answer or the short answer?
The short answer would be best because we've already gone 15 minutes over. So.
Well, I'm guessing that since he's talking about it in his everyday life, I'm guessing he's talking about during the daytime. So the bar walk is kind of the way to get around approach anxiety at night because you're going around and creating value just by, you know, opening up all these groups and then leaving and then coming back. So that by the time you come back, they're already attracted. But mm-hmm. During the day, basically, you can just start off by talking to warming up your social muscle, you know, developing your social muscle. And what that means is just embrace the part of you that is curious about people and looks for what is interesting or unique or special about every single person and just go up and talk to them about that. So it's a lot easier to start off with people who you know, you don't have any sort of pressure around the interaction. So you want to start with talking to other guys, and then you can start to talk to maybe like women who you're not attracted to. If you're walking through the park or something and you see some like older ladies, you can just be like, "Hey ladies, how's it going? You know, you're looking nice today," you know, like, and then,
grand milf
just
action.
A guaranteed smile and, yeah. And, you know, just kind of gets you your social juices flowing, especially if you're an introvert. I don't know if you're introvert or extroverted, Dan. I'm guessing you're introverted because extroverts typically don't worry too much about approach anxiety.
I did. I definitely had a ton of it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of extroverts have approach anxiety, but I think that what you're touching on is really important, and that is the basis for all approach anxiety, all of it, no matter who you are, it's all the same thing at the core that's the problem, and that is your social muscle is weak.
A flabby social muscle.
Yes. So your social abilities, like your ability to talk, your approach anxiety is having a weak social muscle. That's all it is. And that is what that means is that you don't interact with people you don't know as often. So yeah. If you just try to talk to women that you're attracted to, you're never going to have a strong strong social muscle because it's kind of like walking into a bar or walking into a gym rather and trying to lift 500 pound weights only. You know, trying to bench press 500 pounds only. And that doesn't work. You know, you can have a really serious problem doing that. So you can hurt yourself doing it too, actually. And it won't make you stronger. It'll make you weaker. You'll injure yourself. And that's what rejection is. Rejection is that injury. So what you want to do instead is you want to start out with easy to talk to people. Like people that are easy to talk to. Old people are really easy to talk to. Other guys are easy to talk to. And do that until you feel like you're in a groove. And then start talking to women after that you're attracted to.
And the first step too, Dan, I mean, change your lifestyle. If your lifestyle isn't like leading you to these interactions naturally, if you're not going outside during your day-to-day life, you didn't say whether you are or not, but I know that at different points in my life, I've been like pretty confined to my room. You know, I've worked from home for several years, and I would sort of, my hobbies would kind of keep me inside and by myself or with just my roommates. And then by the time that I would go out, there'd be so much pressure to like make something happen because I hadn't been working out my social muscle all day. So it might be, you know, just starting to integrate things like going to coffee shops during the day. Even if you don't like coffee, you know, just go get tea or juice or something, or just, you know, go out to lunch, different places, go read articles on your iPad or something in a public place, you know.
That's if you have an iPad, I guess.
Well, whatever. I was going to say go read the newspaper, and then I was like,
who reads the newspaper?
My dad.
But yeah, you're right. You're right, Brad. I mean, that's exactly what I would say too, you know. You have to work out your social muscle, and you don't want to start off too hard. It sounds like you already got some interaction going though. It sounds like you're talking to some people though, Dan, and because I'm listening to your other question was about, you know, keeping your state up, which means you're already attracting women and doing that. But if you really want to get in that space, you have to be comfortable. You have to be in a place where you know that you're the kind of guy who talks to any kind of person he's interested in or curious about. As soon as you get that belief in your head, you have no more approach anxiety. It's cured. And it will be gone forever as long as you maintain it. But if you ever let it go for a little while, it'll get weaker. Then you have to work it up again. It's kind of how it is. You know, being in a relationship, if I had to leave my relationship right now and I was single all of a sudden out of nowhere, you know, and I was like, okay, well, I have to go talk to people. It would take me about 2 hours to really get my social muscle built back up again, you know. But for 2 hours, I would suck, you know. And that's kind of how it is. And you have to realize that that is the process. Now, I interact with a lot of people in general, but still, you know, I do that specifically because I keep that social muscle worked out, you know, and keeping it comfortable. So, okay, cool. Brad, do you want to...
next question.
Next question it.
All right. So this is part two from Eddie's earlier question.
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach the Tao when you're using it to approach your ex? You're ahead of the curve, though, Josh, my man. He basically said, you know, this is the reason that he's looking for relationship advice is just to talk to his ex.
He said he's bought, I'm just going to say this. He said, I bought this and 47,899 other seduction courses. Obviously, that's an exaggeration, but I understand what you're saying. And I've been there too. So, if you are attempting to reframe an interaction with your ex, meaning that you're trying to get her back, the first thing I would say is that you can never get an ex back unless you're comfortable letting your ex go first. Because you'll be too needy the whole time, and it'll show in everything that you do and say. You'll freak out. You cannot do that. So the first thing you have to do is have other options. That's the first thing you have to do. You don't have to sleep with them or anything, but you need, at least need to know that other girls want you. You can't. Otherwise, you'll be too needy. This is the classic mistake from guys who have screwed up. And, you know, screwed up in their relationships or whatever, and they when women leave them or something happens, they don't know what happens, and they end up breaking up. That's the biggest problem I've seen from guys trying to get back, including myself. I've done this before too. And they just keep thinking that you keep trying to be nice and whatever, and none of it works, right? The best thing you can do is show her in a non-direct way, meaning, like, you have to go, hey, look, this is, you know, it's really great to know you. It's really great to know you in general, and I appreciate your time. You know, I appreciate being around you. I just really want you to know that. It's really cool. And then she needs to start seeing you with other women. Not like, oh, hey, didn't know you were going to be here with another girl in your arm. Not like that. But I mean, like, go out to a bar. You have mutual friends. You know she's going to be there. Go there. Don't flirt with women in front of her directly. Like, go, hey, talk to her, and then walk away and talk to a chick. You know, you don't want to do that. And then look over at her and make sure she's seeing. You need to make it seem like you are moving on with your life, right? Because she's going to have absolutely no reason to get back together with you at all unless she thinks you're going to be gone tomorrow. She right now knows that you're going to be there tomorrow, Eddie. And so she doesn't need to get back with you. You know, and that will always be the case. Now, I typically recommend that you move on anyway. And just go to the next step, you know, attract other women. And if she's going to be there later on, she will be, and you'll try it out then. That's what I would do if it were me. In fact, that's what I did do. The girl that I'm dating now, we sort of got together in the beginning, and it wasn't working out, and I was screwing it all up, and I was like, I got a split. I left, and 8 years later, came back and got her. You know, I don't want you to wait eight years if you want that to happen. You know, so instead of having the same sort of problem over and over again, I highly recommend that you sort of don't have to make it known. You just have to focus on attracting other women, and you have to be able to do that because you're both single. You know, you go out to a bar. If she's there, hey, say hey, talk to her for a little while, and then make your rounds. You know, start bar walking again. You have to get better at this because there's a lot of stuff that you don't know yet that you have to know. And in fact, there's a lot of stuff you don't know that you don't know. So you want to explore that stuff and sort of make self-improvement like this a part of your life, and she needs to see that you are a different person. There's something called the Diamond Principle, and I got to really briefly touch on this because we have one more question, and it's quite a long one from Jonathan. Something called the Diamond Principle, Eddie, and it's the concept that no one believes you've changed or that you're any different than you used to be when they've known you before unless they know that you have one of two things working against you, and that is you've had a lot of pressure lately or that you've had a lot of time difference between last time I talked to you and now. So if you've seen her recently, you have to give her the impression that you were under some kind of pressure. And if you, the longer you can stay away from her without talking to her, the more likely it is she's going to look at you with fresh new eyes. That's really important. It's called the Diamond Principle. You want to use the Diamond Principle to your advantage. You have probably a lot of friends in your life that as you started studying this stuff, they were like, that's weird. You're weird now. Or you felt like you need to hide it from them. And that happens to a lot of people. It happened to me. I lost all my friends but like one or two, you know? And over time, because I just shifted all of a sudden overnight into a new person and no one could accept it, right? Because I had found some amazing concepts and amazing thought and patterns. But no one could accept that. So I had to basically find a whole new group of friends because people don't accept change in people they know unless they have one of the two areas of the Diamond Principle. Pressure, meaning that you've been under a lot of pressure, like your grandmother died or your mother died, or you realized that your life was pointless and so you went on a journey to figure it out, whatever, you know, something that's bigger than you, and it helped you realize some stuff. If you have that, she'll be more interested in talking to you. That plus, you got to learn how to attract women, obviously. It's really important because she needs to know that when she gets you, that you have a lot of options. If she thinks you don't have a lot of options, she'll never go for you because she'll think that you're always going to be there. So that's really important. Brad, you want to go to the next one?
Actually, it's a lot of like little bursts of questions, and I think you should kind of just pick through them one by one.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Okay. So first thing, Jonathan, you said you don't know when to show interest and when not to show interest in relationship balance. In relationship balance, you're always showing interest. The end. So that's that. You're never going to say, I'm not interested in you. That thought should never cross anyone's mind. That would mean that you're not attracted to them anymore, and that can ruin a relationship. So you're always going to show interest whenever you're in a relationship. Neediness is absolutely necessary for a long-term relationship. So that's one. Let me see. Okay, so now you're asking about attraction and relationship balance. Okay, you're asking if a relationship is reduced to like sort of push and pull that happens during attraction? No, it's not at all. In fact, there's the attraction part of relationship balance is not about the push and pull or the turning away or the negative body language or any of that stuff. It's only about the lighthearted, fun conversation. So it's like the fun part, the good part of that of the attraction that's not sort of playing games, so to speak. That's the part that of attraction that you want to keep within your relationship. You're asking again if women, attractive women specifically, just need that space, that kind of space, in order to maintain interest. No, of course not. Not every woman does. You need to gauge that by going through the relationship balance process. If you haven't cracked open the Dial of Badass and gone through the section called the system, then go through it. In the relationship balance stage, I talk about balancing those four different areas. You have to be able to balance those areas. Every woman is different, so you got to figure out where she sits and what she wants. It sounds a lot like you're afraid of being too needy in the relationship, which is probably because you feel like you are being too needy, which is probably possible that you are. You're probably suffocating her. So you have to, but that's only one area of the four areas of relationship balance. You have to make sure the other three are in balance, and that will keep you from being too needy. So we can talk more about that later on. I'm sure if you have any other questions, post it in the members area, and we should be able to get to you on that. For some reason you say here, you talk about controlling emotions, but I never talk about that. I've never talked about controlling emotions. I definitely don't think that you should lose control very often, because it'll make the girl that you're with feel like she can't lose control of her emotions, which is basically her right as a woman to be able to do that. So you don't want to lose control of your emotions often, but you say, I don't ever talk about controlling your emotions. That's not something that I think guys should really do, because it's really detrimental. It can stress you out a lot, actually, and actually kill you. You can die of a heart attack if you don't watch out, because it'll create a lot of stress trying to keep that from bubbling up, so to speak. You don't want to try and stop yourself from feeling them, but you do want to consider that what you say has an effect on the person that you're dating. So if you say, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm a failure, and you say all that stuff, it's going to affect her. And if she's not in the headspace where she can accept that and make you feel stronger, meaning maybe she's not at her place of complete power yet, where she's feels like she's in control or confident, then she's going to feel scared. And like you don't know what's going on, or you don't have any control over the relationship. And that's going to be really bad. So you have to choose the way that you say it really specifically for the person that you're dating at that exact moment. You have to make sure that you pay attention to them. Relationship balance, like I said, and this could be this could be its own course, its own book. And in fact, it will be its own book. But, you know, a lot of guys don't really care about it, which is why I didn't really write about it that much. They're like, I don't care. That happens after I get laid, you know? So I didn't really do that too much. But anyway, it's very, very, very important. And most of my work that I've done is past the attraction stuff. So next one is, are naturals just guys who don't feel as much that something is wrong with us? Is that what it says?
And something.
Oh, and something is wrong with us. Oh, are naturals guys who don't feel as much, just in general? No, they're not. They're guys who figure this out without knowing how they figured it out. That's all they are. Naturals are guys who go completely on gut feeling, and that's it. They don't go on strategy or anything like that. They just feel something, and they do it. And usually it's because they're modeling somebody over time. Naturals don't have the ability to control their environment, but they do have the ability to relax in their environment because they're not thinking about what they're doing. Eventually, you will get to the point where you are basically a natural. You have the same abilities as a natural. As soon as all the stuff in your conscious mind sinks into your subconscious, you will become a natural too, and it'll be easy for you. Okay. Oops. My page just refreshed. Let me go back to the Q&A section. Da-da-da-da-da. Just refreshed again. I don't know why.
It's doing the same thing for me.
Okay. Must be something on the side of the thing we're using. Okay. Where was I here? Da-da-da-da. Okay. It says, isn't holding back in a way like a defensive mechanism? I think there's a lot of assumption here around all these questions, Jonathan, that I think that you should hold back your emotions. I don't know why you think that I think that, but that's not, I've never said that before, so I don't. Basically, all of these things are about that. If you haven't read The Tao of Badass, then you need to read it. If you have, then I don't think you would be asking these questions, because the entire section on creating love is all about being expressive in emotion and following a formula that I created that allows you to have guidance while you are emoting so that you don't come across as clingy, but you come across as powerful while you're still expressing your emotions and being vulnerable, and also while building a massive amount of rapport. So that's most of your questions were all about that, which is good. They're good questions, but it just sounds like you didn't read that part of the book yet. So just go back and check that part out, and you'll get a ton out of it. We got another person here. It says, I fully understand that. I don't know what you're talking about there, Edwin. okay. It's about dating other people. Is it blocking?
Yeah.
The Diamond Principle is really important. He's kind of talking about how it's a really important concept. It is. You are lucky. It's funny. You are lucky. It says, I'm very lucky. As everyone knows, I just went through hell recently. That's funny, but you are lucky. That's true, because otherwise no one would know that, and everyone would be judging you for it, and no one would accept you, and that would be really, really tough for you. But you have to remember that people just know that because you told them. So all you have to do is tell them when you're going through a lot of crap, and they will know. You don't want to constantly do this because people will think you're crying wolf. But when you do have a problem that you want, when you do have a big realization of something new, you want to call out all the stress that you've had and all the changes you've had in your life, and let people know that you come to some crazy realization because of it, and then they'll accept that change about you. And I just got another question from Victor that says, does negative body language matter during relationship balance? I went over that earlier, Victor, so when this recording comes out, go ahead and check it out, and you will get the answer to that. So, guys, we went way over time. more than happy to continue. Looks like some of the guys on the online actually got kicked off. Looks like the only person left is a couple people who are left on the call. So thank you so much for being here, guys. I appreciate you sticking around to the bitter end. It's 8:02 now, so I'm going to go ahead and split. But if you have any questions at all, please feel free to post them in the members area, and then also post them for the next call. The next call will be next Thursday, which is the 1st of December. Woohoo! So we'll be doing that. And December's a little weird because we have a lot of weeks in December. There are 5 weeks in December. So we'll be doing one on the 1st, one on the 15th, and one on the 29th. And, of course, on the 9th of December, I will be teaching my boot camp in New York City. So I'm excited about that. If you guys can make it, shoot Brad an email, brad@thedaoofbadass.com, and he will hook you up with information on that. So, all right, guys, take care. Thanks, Brad, for being here. I appreciate it, man.
Of course.
And I'll talk to everyone later on. Have a good night.